He's been seen on CNBC, the Fox News Channel, and the Fox Business Channel. His articles can be found on MarketWatch, Seeking Alpha, TheStreet.com, and many other places. He's the author of the weekly Best Stocks Now newsletter and the inventor of the Best Stocks Now app. He's president of Gunderson Capital Management. Here is professional money manager, Bill Gunderson.
And welcome to the Monday morning. It is the post Jackson Hole speech edition of the Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson. It's the Best Stocks Now show, and we got a lot to talk about here today. And as usual, there's always a lot of news on a daily basis coming in on individual companies. Right now we have a split market after a really big day on Friday. The Dow is down 168 at 45,463, but the big story is it broke out to a new all-time high on Friday after waiting for a rate cut for 9 months. That's how long it took, where it just kind of sputtered in that 45,000 area. Finally, it broke out on Friday, so thank you, Jerome Powell. The NASDAQ, on the other hand, is up 4 points right now. It's in the green. It's at 21,500. The S&P 500 is minus 10 points to 6,456. The bond market has moved up. It had a pretty good rally on Friday, but it's still, you know, it's a slow-moving index. Keep that in mind. The 10-year is down to 4.26%, so it's come down just a little bit since Powell's announcement. Gold had a good day on Friday, especially the gold miners. And gold is down a little bit here today. It can't seem to get through that 3,400 level. Gold is at 3,411, so just slightly above it, actually. And Bitcoin getting beat up today. Bitcoin is down 4,000 to 110,729. So welcome to today's Best Stocks Now show with professional money manager Bill Gunderson, president of Gunderson Capital Management, a nationwide fee-based only money management firm. And we are off to the races again on this Monday. If your kids aren't back in school by now, probably this is the week that they're going back. We're already getting grandkids showing up sick. You know, it seems like they get back to school and there's all those bugs and germs floating around. And, man, before long, somebody is sick. Anyways, the market's not too sick. It had a good day on Friday. And I couldn't help but when I woke up Monday morning and started looking at the stock charts where they ended for the week, the one that jumped out at me, and it's the first chart I look at every morning, it's just a chart of the Dow because it's the one they report every night in the news. And there it was, bang, breaking out to the upside. It was a beautiful chart, beautiful. And I looked it back at how long it's been since it last broke out to new highs. It's been 9 months, Barry. And guess how long it's been since we have gotten a rate cut? Nine months,
right? Yeah.
So you have to draw a correlation between the inaction of Powell, whether it was warranted or not, and interest rates and the Fed, because it took the Fed finally on Friday doing what they did, and I'll have Barry clarify just a little bit more on that Fed speak and where are the odds now for a rate cut at the next meeting. But that's what it took, okay, for the Dow to go up 800 points to break through that 45,000 level and remain there, okay? Now, whether or not it follows through and continues on and up, it is down today. It is selling off today. We do have valuation problems in the Dow and the NASDAQ and the S&P. That doesn't mean they won't go higher, but it is an impediment, obviously, because the valuations are pretty stiff here at the current level. But that was a beautiful chart on Friday. That was a very clear breakout in the Dow, the soggy Dow. We'll go through some of the individual stocks in the Dow here in a moment, but that was a significant technical breakout.
moved you so much that you sent the sent it out on Saturday morning.
Yeah, early Saturday morning.
Saw the chart. Yeah,
it was the first chart I looked at. It put a smile on my face. Good way to start a Saturday, despite the gloomy weather here in South Carolina. We had a lot of rain over the weekend, especially on Saturday. But that chart definitely put a smile on my face to begin the weekend. And that was the big news, and you can only say it was caused by the Fed and what they said. Now, okay, what are the odds currently? Was he pretty – I didn't really listen to the wording of the entire speech or what he said exactly other than it may be time – what do you think, Barry? Is it pretty certain that we're going to get that Fed cut?
I mean, percentage-wise, you know, based on the speech and some of the speak, right? To me, you would think you'd have a much higher percentage chance, right, of a cut at the next meeting, and I'll talk to a little bit as to why we may not be seeing it at 99%. But right now, it's at 86% percent of a cut. We've got essentially a 14% of, you know, them staying where they are. And the reason being is we've got, you know, between now and in September 17th, which is when I think that's when that announcement will be on that Wednesday for the next meeting, is we've got a CPI report, right, that's going to come out prior to. We've got some job reports that are going to come out prior to. So I think, you know, when I looked at his, you know, because we were doing the show, obviously, while he was speaking, and when I went back and kind of looked at what he said, it didn't seem the most definitive to me. I mean, when you look at all these headlines while we were on the show, it was, you know, definitely going to be a rate cut at the next meeting. It was, I mean, he still talked around it as most, you know, Fed chairs do, right?
Well, that's what I came away with. Yeah. I said, boy, the Dow's up 800 points here. It must be rate cut is pretty sure. Small caps broke out too.
Yeah, which are, you know, small caps, obviously, they're, you know, they turn over their debt more often. They've got more variable debt. And so when you see borrowing costs, particularly on the short end, potentially go down, it really tends to help them the most. Folks have been waiting for a rally in small cap for a long time. But, you know, watching that index, you know, on Friday, you would think that, you know, 50 basis points were cooked in, of cuts were baked in. I mean,
even having that big rally in the small caps, they have not been a good place to be this year, nor have they been in recent years. They've really, really, I've never seen such a big gap between the performance of these big mega cap stocks like NVIDIA and Microsoft, et cetera, to these poor little small caps in the Russell 2000. I think that index is up about 3 or 4% so far this year, and that's all. I did also notice good action in the gold miners, not gold itself. And I would say that that's not a bad way to play gold. They seem to be more leveraged. We talked about that last week. If you're bullish on gold, yeah, it's one thing to have physical gold or gold ETFs or whatever your flavor is of gold exposure, but the gold stocks seem to have been doing the best. Let's see. You know, he, like you say, he did not fully commit to cutting rates, but did note that the downside risk to the labor markets, and there's the key. You mentioned the labor markets, and if you get some really strong labor reports, which we haven't really had recently, but, you know, we've had so many revisions, I don't really know where the labor market is. To me, the most dependable number is the unemployment claims every Thursday, and they remain very low. But if we were to get a big increase all of a sudden, that would probably raise the odds of a rate cut. When is the next meeting, by the way? I'm going to have to put that on my calendar.
It's going to be, I think it's, I think the decision comes out, I think September 17th. So that should be, it's going to be, I mean, as stuff like this always is, it's going to
be in San Francisco that week.
Exactly. So,
yes, on the 16th, 17th, and 18th of September, we'll be on a road trip. We'll be sitting there talking to folks when the Fed announces their decision on Wednesday the 17th. And if he doesn't cut, I don't think the market would be very happy. Now, okay, that's looking ahead to September 17th. We got to look ahead to this week. And then I also.
This Wednesday?
Yeah, I also look to.
Right?
Before we jump away from that, the Kansas City Fed's. The Kansas City Fed Jacksonville Monetary Policy Symposium, blah, blah, blah. It does seem like Powell finally made a pivot. Here's what some of the macro guys are saying. This is about the September Fed meeting. If you get solid economic data, you'll get a hawkish cut in September. If you get a bad data, you'll get a dovish cut. So I guess he's looking for a cut one way or another. It's just the wording afterwards, like, okay, we're going to give you one, but don't expect one at the, or, yeah, you know, I think we need to start going on a, and when we come back, there's ramifications rippling through the economy because of the current interest rate environment. I had an interesting conversation over the weekend. More on that when we come back. Welcome back here to the second quarter of today's Best Stocks Now show. Well, the Dow, this is, you know, we've talked a lot about how earnings bottomed out in 2009. Where were you in 2009? That's when the S&P 500 got down to 660. And now here, that was after the, of course, the financial crisis of 08 and 09 and TARP funds and all that kind of stuff. It seemed like a distant
old
memory.
TARP. Yeah, TARP funds. That's right.
Yeah. And, you know, we've had earnings going up every year since then. And more proof that, hey, you know what? Markets follow earnings. Do you know that the Dow has now gone up 13 straight years with at least one all-time high, surpassing the epic 1989 to 2000 streak, which was 12 years. So 13 straight years with at least one new all-time high. And why? Because earnings for the Dow have been hitting new all-time highs year after year. And obviously, if you just want to use some simple logic, when that earnings growth finally comes to an end, and we don't know when that will be, that's all I can do is look ahead at the estimates for this year, 2025, next year, 2026, and the year after that, 2027, and that's what the market is looking to, and you know, pretty much following. Are those earnings expectations, and that's why I keep an eye on those earnings expectations and estimates that are out there. I did see this past weekend a little bit of a bump higher in the 2027 estimates, which seems like a long ways from now, but that's what the market is trading on right now. Only six of the Dow 30 are in the red this year. United Healthcare, minus 39.2% year-to-date. You saw Warren Buffett step up to the plate and buy into United Healthcare, which is a troubled company. Salesforce, believe it or not, is down 25.7% this year. It was added into the Dow fairly recently. On a relative basis, and we've been saying all along that Salesforce just doesn't have the growth mojo that it used to have. Merck is down 12.2% year-to-date. Believe it or not, Apple is in the red this year, a member of the Dow. It's down 9.1%. And it wasn't that long ago that Apple was tied with Microsoft and NVIDIA in a three-horse race, which has now become... Apple is a distant third right now to Microsoft, and NVIDIA has pulled way ahead of Microsoft in the market cap race. Procter & Gamble is down this year 5.4%, and Honeywell is down 1.4%. Biggest winner in the Dow so far this year, 24 out of 30 are up. That's pretty good breadth. The NVIDIA stock up 32.5%. That continues to be our biggest holding, and it's the biggest winner in the Dow. So that's a nice a little factoid there. Boeing is number two this year. It's up 30%. And we've been talking about just the runway indicator. When we go to the airport to travel, we go right by that Boeing plant, and you see all the planes lined up ready for delivery. And that runway's been very, very full of planes on the verge of being delivered, fuller than I've seen it in a long time. Goldman Sachs is the number three performer in the Dow this year. It's up 29.6. And we own Goldman Sachs. It's one of the anointed ones, one of the 20 or so that we own in our premier growth portfolio. Johnson & Johnson we don't own. It's up 24% year-to-date. That's the best year Johnson & Johnson's had in quite some time. But it's still a 1% to 2% grower. That's the problem I have with it. J.P. Morgan up 23.6. 3M up 23. Microsoft up 20. Caterpillar up 20. So that's kind of, and then the soggy ones, they're up about 10-11% so far this year. So it's been even a pretty good year. Nike's only up 3.6. And believe it or not, Amazon has kind of set this one out. Amazon's only up 4.1% so far this year. So that's kind of a rundown there on the Dow. Now, the week ahead. Never a dull moment is one of the themes of this show. We're going to get earnings from NVIDIA, the number one performer in the Dow this year on Wednesday. Alibaba, which is kind of the equivalent of Amazon over in China. CrowdStrike, which is probably the number two or number three software stock now, out there. And in fact, CrowdStrike and Palo Alto have really come to dominate the cybersecurity space. And they're going to report this week. Snowflake, Marvell Technology, an important chip stock, Okta, Dell, MongoDBT, Autodesk, Best Buy, Dollar General, Ulta Beauty, Kohl's, Abercrombie & Fitch, The Gap, Dick's Sporting Goods, Urban Outfitters, Bath & Body Works, and Victoria's Secret all will be reporting, along with a few financial heavyweights, Toronto Dominion, Bank of Montreal. And then in China, which, hey, the Chinese market's been breaking out recently. PDD reported today. We're going to get to their report and a few others. So never a dull moment. But obviously, another big Wednesday, and that's going to be NVIDIA after the close of the market on Wednesday. Oil's been moving up a little bit. In fact, I saw the oil sector. I look at the relative strength numbers. It's been a very poor performer, the oil sector, in 2025. We only own one stock in that sector. But it is rising. Oil, I haven't seen any progress at all. I mean, you had the big powwow in Anchorage, Alaska, and then there was talk of a trilateral meeting between Putin, Trump, and Zelensky. But I haven't really heard anything along those lines. Doesn't see. And in the meantime, Putin continues to blow stuff up, and Ukraine continues to get blown up.
And India still. Part. Yeah, and India is still buying Russian oil. So if they stopped buying Russian oil, then you may have a bit of a demand crunch. But they certainly have not done that to the administration's
And we got to look for the next shoe to drop would be severe sanctions on the Russian economy. I think Putin, I mean, that at least got him to fly to Anchorage and meet with Trump there. And he's worried about those severe sanctions against him, but it doesn't seem to be moving the needle. But I would say it's going to come to a head, I would think, this week. Either we're going to sit down and talk with Zelensky, all three of us, or there's going to be some severe sanctions put on Russia. Then the question is, how will Putin lash out at the rest of the world if there are severe sanctions put on him? Okay. Well, there was another big event that happened after the market on Friday, if it wasn't enough that we had the Fed speech. And I really want to talk about interest rates when we come back and the impact it's having on our economy. We'll be right back.
This is Bill Gunderson. Thank you for tuning in to today's Best Stocks Now, Best Inverse Funds Now show. I put several hours of research in during the wee hours of the morning each day to bring you the very best cutting-edge stories that I can. To get 2 free weeks of my newsletter, go to GundersonCapital.com. To talk to us about our fee-based only money management services, call us at 855-611-BEST. Now, back to the second half of the show.
Welcome back here to the second half of today's Best Stocks Now show. The NASDAQ has gone positive. That means I've gone positive too, Barry. I always like to see that NASDAQ in the green. It's up 21 points right now. I'm no longer grumpy. The NASDAQ, or the Dow is down, however, 187. That's 0.4%. But it's good to see that Dow follow, or that NASDAQ following through on Friday's gains. Okay, now, after the close on Friday, it was announced, much to the chagrin of libertarians. They don't like government interference in private enterprise, but the U.S. government announced a massive $11.1 billion investment in Intel. Now, if I'm not mistaken, we deployed a lot of the same tactics during the 08 and 09 financial crisis. And, you know, I think the Chrysler, you can go back to Chrysler and other companies along the way that were kind of like too big to fail, I suppose. I mean, we did go out and put our neck on the line in 08 and 09 with those TARP funds and actually made money when all was said and done. So, you know, an investment by the U.S. government in Intel, the Santa Clara-based semiconductor firm, and that's exactly where we're going. We're going to ground zero on September 16th, 17th, and 18th in Santa Clara at the Marriott there. The funding will come from several different avenues. Of course, there was still money remaining in the CHIPS Act, which I never did really understand the CHIPS Act. Why do they need money from the U.S. government? Here's some money. You know, I would rather see it tied to something. But, you know, we've had a long history here in the U.S. of just doling out money. They love to announce, these politicians, both sides, D and R's, they just love to announce some big package that they put together. We're going to send billions and billions of dollars to these people, and of course the local congressman can pound his chest and whatnot. But you know, there's got to be an end to this at some point in time. So at least there's been a different approach taken, and it's using funds that are already out there. In fact, 5.7 comes from that CHIPS Act that wasn't even spent. The U.S. is going to buy 433 million shares at $20.47. So write that down, and we'll find out if Intel can double. You know, they'll make money on the deal. That equates to about a 9.9% stake in Intel. So that was a big news, and of course, you know, that does bring up the fact that the government is taking more power, I would say, over the economy. And there's been some different debates on this. But I look at it, most of these other countries have sovereign wealth funds. Norway has a huge sovereign wealth fund. Saudi Arabia has a huge sovereign wealth fund. And they invest, Japan has some sovereign wealth fund money out there. So anyways, I think, you know, Trump is a deal maker, and he's not just throwing money willy-nilly at things. he's wanting some equity in return. So you can debate it till the cows come home. The Cato Institute, which is pretty much a libertarian think tank, they claim that it's a terrible decision, bad for almost everyone. That's the Cato Institute. The Koch brothers are a big part of that Cato Institute. So anyways, that's what happened, and it is. Let's see how Intel is doing. Intel was up 5.5% on Friday. It's at $25.32, Barry, so we're already up $5. Trump's already up $5 a share. He's got a 25% gain so far. Now, okay, there's another side of this coin where government is getting involved, and you could say that it's a shift in priorities. I mean, we've been doling out money to the green energy companies for years. And, you know, if you look through my newsletter, you'll see my picture on with Megyn Kelly on, you know, the evening news on a Thursday or whatever it was, because I had kind of a scoop on what was going on with a company in the Bay Area called Solyndra, come up with like fluorescent lights. So they're round tubes and they were supposed to absorb more sunlight for solar. And instead, it was a total money laundering, you know, handout. Billions and billions of dollars went down the tubes, pardon the pun, the fluorescent tubes, the solar tubes. And we've been pouring money into that industry, wind and solar, and, you know, paying off good old boys. And I don't know. That's not a very good investment, in my opinion. So now you got this company, Ørsted, which is in Copenhagen, Denmark. There, we're doing a big wind project off of, Rhode Island. And Trump put a halt to it. And the shares of Ørsted, which is a big, big company in Europe, are down 19% in Copenhagen after a U.S. order halts construction on a nearby completed project, putting the wind farm developers' capital raising plans in jeopardy. Well, why are we supporting a Danish company in the first place? Don't we have wind companies here in the U.S.? But they did put an end to it. Now, I want to talk a little bit about interest rates. I talked with someone on Sunday. I have a new assignment in the church, which spreads my wings a little bit. I'm over a larger, not over, but helping out with a large group of 18 to 30-year-olds in a larger geographic area. So not only did I learn a lot from them, several of them, Barry, are in the nuclear school here in the Navy.
There we go, yeah.
Now, Charleston is known. It's where they send, the Navy sends them here to learn how to run the nuclear reactors on the submarines and on the aircraft carriers. And I talked to some of these young men on Saturday. Number one, I'm partial to the Navy. My father was in the Navy, in World War II's Navy, and he was a submariner. And I said, you guys, you don't realize what a pretty spot you're sitting in to get this knowledge of the new. This is probably the hottest industry in America. But the other guy I talked to, and he's one of the guys I'm working with in the leadership of this group of people, he owns a giant company in Virginia that builds sawmill equipment, large sawmills, where they put the logs through there, and out come 2x4s and 2x6s and all the other things. And he said because of they're very much tied to the housing industry and the sawmills and the lumber industry, a couple of things here, home buying is way down. Okay, the home building probably is the biggest user of lumber, without question, across the U.S. And he said to me, Bill, you look here in Charleston and you see housing projects going up and whatnot, but you look across the country, it's pretty much come to a standstill because of interest rates. They're too high. And, you know, for instance, his mortgage was 2.9%. Okay, a young person's mortgage today is up in the high sixes. So that's brought a screeching halt to it. And many of these sawmills are having to shut down, number one, because the demand for lumber is not there and lumber prices are crashing. So they're closing sawmills, number one. Number two, he says, we don't need Canada's lumber. We have plenty of lumber right here in the United States of America, and Canada just continues to process lumber. I guess they've got enough of it to go around, and we continue to take it. I'm surprised we're still taking it under Trump. But he says that, you know, that's just also depressing the price of lumber. Even though a 2x4 is pretty expensive at Home Depot, it hasn't really trickled down to the guy hauling home a little bit of lumber for a fix-it project. But the lumber market, and don't forget paper. We're using a lot less paper than we used to. And all of the shavings and the leftover stuff they used to grind up into paper, and now they don't have a use other than Amazon cardboard boxes, which we've always got a garage bunch of cardboard to get rid of. I would think that that's picked up a lot of the slack. But he says that it's a depression taking place right now in the lumber industry because of high interest rates. And that's, you know, one of the impacts of Jerome Powell keeping rates high for so long, 9 months since the last rate cut, and you've got people that, it just trickles down. If people can't afford to buy a home, it trickles right on down to the carpenters, the home builders, the hardware companies, the lumber yards, and on and on and on, the real estate agents, the mortgage agents. We'll be right back. And welcome back here to the final segment of the Best Stocks Now show. You know, Meta. You know, I look at Zuckerberg, and he's kind of the ultimate nerd, right? He just looks like a nerd. Usually nerds are really, really smart. But now they've got these nerd glasses that they're coming out with. And, you know, you got to kind of... Dick Tracy had the watch, and of course Apple has the watch. But I mean, these glasses, which are pretty thick glasses, you know, if you saw a guy wearing them, you know, back when I was in high school, you say that guy's a nerd or something. You know, Prada glasses, they have thick frames and blah blah blah. But they're suitable for Meta's Hypernova. Now, get this, Barry. In the right-hand corner of the lens while you're wearing those glasses, man, you'd think that'd be distracting. You're going to have a display, you know, that's going to tell you that you've got incoming email, incoming text messages. It will be about 20% of the field of vision and be used primarily for notifications. The glasses are going to be $800 each. They'll react to something you wear on your wrist to hand gestures. So if you're sitting there in church, all of a sudden you start raising and shaking your hand, what, you're probably getting an incoming message, right? I don't know. But anyways, look, you'll be able to take and share photos. So right from your glasses, you take a photo, share it, send it. I mean, this is the metaverse, I guess. Once you're wearing these, you've entered into the metaverse. You can send videos. You can make phone calls through your glasses, video calls, send and receive messages, listen to audio playback, and interact with an AI assistant. So really, I mean, it's kind of a little piece of your brain, too. Anyways, $800, is it a game changer? I don't know. Are you going to run out and get one?
I guess you'll never get rid of screen time in that sense, right? Because you're always going to have it. That, you know, I don't know. It always seems tricky when, you know, whenever, you know, in terms of any type of these glasses that have been going on for a while now, whether it was Google Glass, remember they had theirs, it was, you know, getting folks to wear glasses when they don't need to wear glasses, right, seems a little... I don't know. It seems hard to necessarily for everyone to adopt it, but we'll see what happens.
I might just get a pair. Just it might make me look smarter, just wearing those things and seeing text messages flash across my eyeballs there. Pretty soon they'll just put it inside your eyeball or something.
Yeah.
But that's the direction we're going to be in this thing called the metaverse. You know, crypto. I've had many discussions with people. These days, when people hear what I do for a living, I would say the number one question is, what do you think of crypto? And I really don't know how to answer that question, honestly. The back of in my pit of my stomach, I don't like it. I don't like the fact, and you can argue all day long and try to tell me where the intrinsic value is of it. And I would just say there's a generation gap. I mean, if you're under 30, 35, 40, you're like got a lot of your money into crypto. And I've just asked the question, will this turn into another Holland tulip bulb? Will this turn into another .com? That's the way I see it ending. I don't know when. Maybe it goes to $1 million before that happens. But I just kind of see it as the ultimate Ponzi scheme, or the pyramid scheme, I guess is a better word for it. What will it take to get a run on the bank and get people to panic? And, crypto's had a pretty rough week. It hit 124, and now it's 110. And I had one bit of exposure personally in my personal little trading
incubator account,
and I sold it like 2 weeks ago. It got up to 66 when crypto was hitting 124. I didn't like the chart.
Wouldn't that BitB? I think it was BitB.
Yes, BITB, and I sold it for like, I don't know, 20% profit somewhere in there. I was glad to get out of it because I never have liked owning it myself. That's just me. Everybody's different. You know, I mean, we've seen guys that have seen some tremendous bubbles in the past and then see them burst are a little bit more wary of things like this. And this is unlike any other asset class I've ever seen. At least a Holland tulip bulb is something you can put in the ground and get tulips from. And they're spending, you know, the energy that goes into mining these coins. I was reading about one of these crypto companies and how many NVIDIA chips they bought. And don't forget, that's been part of the run-up in NVIDIA because with those high-speed chips that NVIDIA has, they can mine more of the cryptocurrency. So anyways, the stocks linked to them are having a pretty rough week here, you know, Strategy, Coinbase, Galaxy Digital. And you just wonder, I mean, where is the point where people start to get nervous and run for the exits on the downside? And it's gone through several pretty stiff corrections in the past, and it's recovered every time to go on to make a new all-time high. And I'm sure we could get a lot of crypto. You see these people, YouTube influencers and financial, you've got crypto diva and crypto this and crypto guru. And, you know, I know where the Lakers play. It's the crypto.com stadium now. And I see that, or arena. And Charlie Kirk is sponsored by crypto.com or one of those. I have an uneasy feeling about it, okay? And that's just where I'm coming from. All right, so anyways, Wedbush is saying that the supply-demand ratio for NVIDIA's chips is about 10 to 1. For every 10 chips that are wanted immediately, there's only one available. So they like that equation as we go into a Wednesday's earnings announcement. Home sales continue to fall, which we talked about. As they hit the highest rates, home sales falling through at highest rates in years. These are sales that are falling through because the people can't qualify. And I look to the Fed for keeping interest rates too high for too long. All right. Well, you know, if you want to reserve a spot to our foray into the Santa Clara area, on September 16th, 17th, and 18th. Those appointments are going fast, the one-hour appointments on those 3 days, and the workshop is filling up on that Tuesday 16th at the Marriott in Santa Clara. Give us a call at 855-611-BEST to reserve a slot. Have a great day, everybody.
This show is not a solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Bill Gunderson or clients of Gunderson Capital Management may have long or short positions in stocks mentioned during the show. Past performance is not indicative of future performance. Gunderson Capital Management is a fee-based registered investment advisory firm. All accounts are held at Charles Schwab. Schwab is a member of SIPC and FINRA.